me, the only secure computer is shut off in a lead box over in the corner, right? But we can't do that. It's a risk and reward. You need to do business. Like everything else, you have to get the right amount of security, and you take some risks whenever you do it. You just try to reduce it and make it difficult.
Greetings and salutations. Welcome to the Development Best Practices Podcast, brought to you by ILM Professional Services. I'm Jason Erdahl, your podcast host, and in this episode, I'm happy to welcome back Robert Bodenheimer, Microsoft MVP, Pluralsight author, and MDC speaker for part two in our series on cryptography. If you haven't listened to part one, I'd suggest pausing this one and listening to that previous episode, which lays the groundwork for much of what we'll talk about today. In this episode, Robert and I talk about encryption across programming languages, symmetric versus asymmetric encryption, and a bit about key rotation. And here's Robert again.
So Robert, you and I are both primarily .NET full stack folks. So I know a lot of your examples that you include in your various videos and writing on this topic are in .NET. I also use Node and Python on occasion. I assume there's versions of these algorithms in different languages?
Yes. So that's okay, the good news. I mean, when you learn about cryptography and you learn about the primitives like hashing and encryption and signing, the good news is that these algorithms like AES is common. That's what you should be using for encryption, symmetric encryption. And so each language, library, you know, framework, platform, you'll find these same things across all of those. So once you learn what the right algorithm is and how to use it, then it's really just a matter of finding a good implementation of it. So as you walk over to, say, Node, you want to find a library that's trusted within the Node community as being a good implementation, because that's part of it, right? I mean, the algorithm is one thing, but if it's implemented poorly, you still don't have security. So I use an example in a lot of the talks that SHA-3 is a hashing algorithm that's new. NIST ran a contest, and it's one of the latest ones. Unfortunately, right. .NET doesn't have an implementation of it. So I say, I'm not going to go to George's blog and pull down his random code that he says in C-sharp does SHA-3. George might be really smart, but it hasn't been vetted. So whichever area you're in, you need to identify what's the right trusted library to use, but at least the algorithms and such are all the same.
Meanwhile, George is listening to the podcast going, wait a minute, what did I do?
Why are you dissing me? Yeah, I don't know.
Oh my gosh, what did I ever do to you? Hey, George, we love your blog. Big fans. So anyway, okay. Symmetric versus asymmetric algorithms. There's a difference, obviously. There's an extra letter at the beginning of asymmetric. Are there other differences that
there
might
are
be
some
more
other
meaningful?
Differences? Yes.
Thank you. So, fire away.
Yeah, symmetric, the reason it's named that way is you use the same secret key for both encryption and decryption. Okay. It's very fast, and it does large amounts of data. So in general, symmetric is what I would like to pick all the time for encryption because of all of those reasons. The problem with it is the key distribution is difficult. If you think about it, that shared secret key. So I use examples like if I were doing a meetup, right? And I start saying something and somebody in chat says, will you please securely send me that information? How do I do that, right? I'm back. It's a chicken and egg. I want to send you a secret, but I need a key that we both know. But I can't send you the key because I can't send you things securely. So that becomes the difficulty. So they came up with asymmetric. And asymmetric encryption is just you have a public and private key pair. So you create that pair. Obviously, you give the public out. So people can use that. You keep the private to yourself. So now when somebody wants to send to me, they will encrypt data using my public key. My private key is the only thing that can reverse that. And cool. So it's great. And then you swing the pendulum and you say, well, I'll just use asymmetric everywhere. The problem is it's an order of magnitude slower than symmetric. And it can't do a large amount of data. So what most modern systems or protocols do is a combination of both of those things. We will establish an initial connection using asymmetric. I will send you then a symmetric key using asymmetric. It won't be too slow. It's not too much data. All I'm going to do is get you the key securely. Then we fall down and use Symmetric for the real encryption of the rest of the session. So you get the best of both, and it solves those problems. And then the only real problem left is, how do I know that's really your public key?
Right.
I need to get that. So it doesn't erase key distribution difficulties. You still have to think through, do I believe this is your public key? So if you put it on Twitter or LinkedIn or something, not an email signature, right? Because emails are postcards.
Right.
If I still have to have some trust, it's your public key. But that's how you typically, it's a combination of both of them to take advantage of both of the things.
Got it. So you gave some great examples of when to use symmetric versus asymmetric algorithms. That's really great. Are there other specific examples of places where you're like, this is an area where you must use symmetric, or this is an area where you must use asymmetric, in your opinion?
In my opinion, I think, so generally I would say, unless you have a reason not to, you're going to use symmetric because it's going to be the fastest. It does bulk data, everything else. But if I have to then get you a key, I'll have to fall back to asymmetric. A good example of an asymmetric use would be, let's say I have a website that needs to take credit cards.
Right.
I get a credit card typed in. I want to encrypt that somehow. If I use symmetric, I need to put a secret key on my web server, right? It's the same key for encryption and decryption. So now I have a secret key sitting on my web server. I treat my web servers like they're compromisable. They're on the web. Zero-day exploits. Somebody could take that box. So I really don't want my secret key to be there.
Right.
So what people do is they'll generate a public-private key pair, store the public out on your web server, encrypt the credit card with your public, and then keep the private inside behind a firewall. In fact, a lot of credit card companies today will generate a public-private key specific to your company. They'll give you that public key, and you'll never have the private. You can never decrypt it. So on the web server, they put their credit card number in, you encrypt it with the public key. Later on, you send it to the processor for authorization. They'll use the private key. So to me, that's the best of all worlds. I can't even decrypt it myself. There's no way anybody could compromise my system and be able to decrypt that. They need the private key, which I don't even own.
That
would be a good use case for that.
Oh, that sounds great. So when I think about passwords, I change them on a regular basis. Do you switch up keys on a regular basis? Do you rotate them? If so, how often?
Another good question. You do want to rotate in general, just because if the key were ever exposed, you want the time period at which people could take advantage of that to be very small. So you do want to do key rotations. It's difficult. I found OWASP has a good cheat sheet that links to a NIST article that talks about this issue and some of the considerations on how often you want to do it. I don't have a specific, like, everybody should do 90 days, or I do look at what HTTP certificates used to have many years before they expired. Now they're all a year or less, and Let's Encrypt is 90 days or less. Because of these same kind of risks, right? You don't want to leave something, because if it is compromised, you don't want to be forever. Someone could gain access to this. Today, what people do a lot, they do that hybrid I was talking about. They'll create a unique session, a symmetric key for this conversation only. So they don't have to, you know, it's only used this one time, and they'll store that encrypted with asymmetric. So they know this is the key I had used, but that's rotating with every message. So it kind of depends on what your needs are, but you do want to have a key rotation strategy, just because if it ever got compromised, you need to be able to switch it.
If my private keys never get exposed, can I just tell my boss I'm impervious to getting hacked? I mean, so game over, I'm good. So my private keys never getting exposed, so I'm good.
Please don't, if you want to keep a job.
That just tempts fate. Fate whenever you say, no one can hack me, I'm good.
Unfortunately, there's so many other things involved with the whole process that you're using cryptography for. So I'll give you a good example. We talked about the credit cards, right? Even if I only had a public key on my web server, I'm using ASP.NET. You type in a credit card number, I need to pull it out of a text box to be able to do encryption. In the meantime, it's sitting in a .NET string. That won't be garbage collected. You know, it's not going to go away until eventually I'm not referencing it and garbage collection kicks in. So somebody could do a process dump of the web server on my web machine and be able to see those transient credit card numbers, for instance. So that's a risk. I also have to worry about things like, you know, we haven't talked too much about hashing yet.
No.
But if I'm doing hashed passwords, I might have a super secure site and I'm doing all the hashing right and I'm keeping up with all the patches and everything else involved with managing it securely. Unfortunately, my customer reused a password on another site that doesn't do any security practices. They can come and if they reuse the same password across sites, they've now got into my site, no fault of my own.
Right.
I did everything right. It's a legitimate password. They just happened to use it somewhere else where it was breached. So those kind of situations, all those come up. You can have a brute force too, right? Even if you use good encryption, somebody can try every possible key. The idea of having a big key space is that should take years and years to try, but it's possible they get lucky and the first key they guess happens to be the key that you have. So yeah, I never say never for that kind of stuff. To me, the only secure computer is shut off in a lead box over in the corner, right? But we can't do that. It's a risk and reward. You need to do business. Like everything else, you have to get the right amount of security and you take some risks whenever you do it. You just try to reduce it and make it difficult.
Yeah. Well, if we do ever get hit by a brute force attack, I'm blaming George from George's blog, kind of trying to give us a little comeuppance for us missing him. So I'm immediately pointing many fingers at George.
Good place to start.
And that seems like a good stopping point. Please be sure to listen in a few weeks to part 3 of our cryptography series with Robert, which will cover hashing, strong numbers, and more. The Development Best Practices podcast is brought to you by ILM Professional Services. Do you want to go to a conference covering a plethora of development best practices? Please join me at the Minnesota Developers Conference, where speakers like Robert Bodenheimer, Mike Benkovich, and Kaisa Tapali talk about development concepts that can help you today. It's on June 22nd, right here in the Twin Cities, and you can find out more at mndevconf.com. Finally, if you like what you heard in this episode, please tell a friend about us. If you have any feedback on this episode or have a topic you'd like us to cover, please email us at podcast@ilmservice.com. Take care.